going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of WTF.
Prime the Time!
I am your host, Evangelist from the Internet. With me today is Gog Dog from the Internet. Also here with me today is Aaron from the Internet.
Yeah, and I'm glad I'm back from that tech call to Florida.
You break in Florida.
Now, somebody broke something in Florida, I had to go fix it.
That's what they do in Florida, I guess. I'm not from America, so I don't really know. And also here with us today is Omega's Prime from the Internet!
Actually trying to move back to the interwebs.
Nope.
Not like the neighborhood.
Interwebs is far too 2009 for me. I'm going retro chic. I'm bringing us back to the bygone era of 1997. So get
My
ready
God.
For it. Today,
pastel colored web pages everywhere.
GeoCities.
Yes.
Today we are here to talk about Transformers Prime Sick Mind. How sick is your sick mind? By the way, for those keeping track of the constant misnamings of the episode titles, I just looked at the working file and I gave it the wrong number. So I have to change that after we're done recording.
Nice. Weren't you just talking about how you were getting it right every time?
Yeah, all the file numbers
have
been right.
It was only
when
you were posting it at like 4 in the morning that you were getting messed up.
Yeah, except I just called this file episode 12, and this is episode 11, I think. I actually opened up CyberDuck so I could look inside the directory to make sure. And yeah, this is episode 11 of Prime Time. So, Sick Mind didn't have any new character intros of note, aside from a model that didn't do anything. So we don't have to really talk about any kind of upfront character stuff like we did with Arachnid last time. So we can just dive right into this episode and sink our meaty hooks into its supple flesh. I want to open up with... Is this the first to be continued that the series has had since the five-parter?
Since the five-parter, yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that, actually. I haven't been watching it or reading ahead for solicits on future episodes. I later found out that this was probably predictable given a solicit. But I was kind of liking it. I was like, hey, to be continued. Something's happening. Did you guys expect a two-parter at this point in the series, or were you thinking it would just be for like a series finale? Or do you think this is some kind of mid-season finale? I'm not really sure myself. Because, I mean, it's episode... What episode of the show is it? I always get messed up because of the five-parter.
It'd be the sixth episode after the five-parter, if this is episode 11?
Yeah. So, I guess it's not even really a mid-season spot for a...
Yeah.
For a finale. It's a two-parter in the middle of the season.
Yeah. You know, if it goes to three-parter, it would be.
I guess. It's pretty cool, though. I don't know. For some reason, that got me really pumped up. Among all the other things in this episode, that's the thing I really wanted to bring up first, was we got a multi-parter. I actually don't know if you guys would have thoughts on it being a multi-parter in hindsight, but that got me excited. Anyone have anything to say about it being a multi-parter, or is that just kind of gliding off the windshield?
Not really. That happened right at the very end.
Yay, yeah. Cliffhangers.
I mean, it's given that this is apparently, at least in some form, Megatron's return, I think that's the occasion for having the two-parter.
Mm.
You know, you have some at the beginning, you have some at the end for finales, but on the other hand, I'm kind of glad. I mean, we'll get more into Megs later, but... Kind of cool that they're not waiting till for the cliche season finale to bring him back. Like,
yeah,
it's the season finale. It's Megatron's return. Like, we didn't see it coming. So this is only about halfway through the first season. So kind of cool.
The show's moving at a good clip. Feels like, considering how, as you said, it could have gone. It's a bit of a nice overall pacing, I think. If you guys want, I guess for the opening thing, we could discuss, finally we're getting some of this nouveau Frank Welker voice back in the show. Megatron is saying stuff again, after a long period of being dead and or comatose. So I think in this episode, given how a lot of the other vocal performances have evolved since the five-parter, I thought that Frank Welker's Megatron was particularly cool in this episode. I am really into his whole, like, far more haggard G1 voice that I think is coming off way more naturally out of him than the G1 voice he was trying to do in the video games. But what did you guys think about Welker's performance here? Starting with Aaron.
Yeah, lost our rhythm for some reason. I thought it was good. I definitely do believe that it's better to not try and force G1 Megatron, because that's not who this is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was with Megatron being there in his dream sequency land, blowing the snot left and right out of Autobots. It was good to see Meg's back, like you said, in some aspect. And then I definitely do believe that Welker is doing a good voice for Megatron and for this Megatron.
Hmm. Yeah, I am not ashamed to say I'm actually enjoying this voice more than Peter Cullen right now. Granted, I know that a lot of us were kind of down on the quote unquote stereotypical Cullen performance at the start, but just overall, of the two big name returning guys, I think Welker's actually really stealing the show right now. Omegas, how'd you feel about Welker's performance?
Always a fan of Welker trying to revitalize the Megatron voice, and I do agree, it's far better than trying to recreate the old one, because it's 80s camp, it's kind of a silly voice if you were to use it now. It makes a lot more sense to have this, you know, this, it's a war-torn style of Megatron,
mm-hmm.
which I really like. It's kind of hard to gauge it. Mostly because he has been absent since the five-parter.
Yeah.
But you could definitely tell there's some different voice direction going on, because there's a little bit more range to him, a little bit more of a natural sound.
That's the word I was looking for, that I felt was really present here, even more so than before, was range. Gog, how about you? How'd you take the Welker return?
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see him back. I don't know if I necessarily get as giddy over it as some other people, but it's still, you know, we need some more ranks into the Decepticons. Welker does a damn good job. I'm glad to see him back. Yeah, I think all the voice acting in this show is really strong, and I think Welker is definitely living up to everything else. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have anything specific to say about it. He did a really good performance, and it's going to be good to have him back.
Yeah, to reiterate slightly something I said way back when we started doing this, Welker was one of the voices I was least excited about seeing come back. So I think that's why I'm so into it right now, is that it's turned out the complete opposite of what I was expecting. And I was expecting it's G1 Megatron, or at least it's him trying to do G1 Megatron again. So this... it's still a pleasant surprise for me when he's exercising far more range than just trying to get that kind of high throat voice. Also, this is completely unrelated, but I want to throw out there, I've got word on Twitter, there's now a drinking game going on as to how many times you hear me say, mm-hmm, in one of these podcasts, so I hope you have mm-hmm. your shot glasses ready, because we're going to be mm-hmming this pretty hardcore. Gog, do you have a point about the episode you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, I'll bring up something from the beginning of the episode. You know, we'll kind of work our way through it. Cybonic plague. Two things. Number one, it's cool that there is robot viruses. Like, maybe not anything exceptionally special about it, but I have no problem with the disease and the fact that, I mean, pretty much anything can get some sort of infection, even if it's just a piece of cast iron can corrode, and humans can get actual viruses, and computers themselves can get viruses and infections that will take over their processes for malicious reasons. And so it would make sense that there would be a Cybertronian analog to such a thing, especially when it was purposely engineered for that purpose. Second point, the name is really stupid. So it's obviously just a play on the bubonic plague. That sort of thing has always been kind of campy. I think with G1, maybe it worked a little better because G1 itself, by its nature, tends to kind of be campy when you have the Metallicado. Like, okay, well, so apparently on martial arts on Cybertron also sounded incredibly Japanese, even though there was no Japanese, there was no Japan on Cybertron.
Yeah.
So like that sort of thing has always been kind of funny. I think it doesn't necessarily work as well with Prime because it's, I mean, okay, maybe you could also make the argument that Cybertronians also, one would think, don't necessarily speak English, so that's them trying to approximate it as close as possible to the English language or whatever the language is to the viewer. But so you could make that argument that they named it that way on purpose because it didn't have an English equivalent, so it did have symptoms for them similar to the bubonic plague, so they called it the cybonic plague. I still think it's a little think it's a little campy, and with the seriousness of Prime, I don't know if it necessarily works. But
I'm curious about how that name would fit together within the realms of the etymology of the word bubonic, which I don't actually know at all. But if you're going to pull apart the word bubonic, how much of that word could they have appropriated? Did they actually properly appropriate it, or did they just go like cyber bubonic is cybonic, which I'm guessing is actually what happened?
Bubonic comes from the Greek word bubo, meaning swollen gland.
How did I know that you were going to tell me what the etymology of bubonic?
Because he has a Wikipedia page open right now.
I don't know.
I do so. Yeah, I do. And I knew that it was something like that, but I wanted to make sure of it.
So that does nullify.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's good research, but come on now, credit where credit is due. Wikipedia.com.
That does nullify the etymology argument I was hoping to make, because bubo does not turn into cybo.
Well, maybe it's. I mean, it's a plague, which I really like the fact that it wasn't like computer virus, but it's actually something else that transmits through tainted energon. And so maybe the energon gets into their cybernetic parts. And so it's a cybonic plague.
At least it wasn't a computer virus that Raph fixed with his magic hacking skills.
Right.
I don't know if any of you guys saw this, and I wanted to bring this up, but when Prime did get infected by it, that to me looked entirely like it was right out of 28 Days Later.
Oh, that was my first reaction. I was like, oh my god, it's in his mouth. It's in his mouth. Okay, yeah. Maybe his eye, but still.
I wasn't sure if anyone else had seen 28 Days Later, so I didn't know if that would be falling on deaf ears or not, but I'm glad someone else thought it, because that was my first thought. I was like, dude, that's just like when the guy gets it in his eye in 28 Days Later. Did Gog Omegas either of you see 28 Days Later?
Unfortunately, I did not see it.
Yep, I have it on DVD.
Awesome. I like that movie. I like the people who make the movie a little bit more than I like the actual movie, but that's a different podcast. I thought it was kind of it was neat that they played that whole, you know, sort of horror movie thing of like through sheer chance someone gets infected with this thing, like, you know, the ship rocks, Prime trips, and then it turns out there's a corpse hanging overhead that dribbled plague juice into his joints.
I would like to know, whenever something like this happens, how does the body get stuck in the ceiling?
That was part of something I was thinking about when I was watching.
Crash landing and he bounced around the inside?
I was like,
but he's still dripping. If he's been there for God knows how long, he should be dry.
I was like, how, you know, when they make these plague ships, do they just, like, get hooks and just hang them from the ceiling so that they just drip out into the floor? Or there was some grisly imagery in there that we can get to at some point.
I think it was more of the plague ship was, it wasn't a ship that they, and this is just complete speculation on my part, but I mean, there was obviously a distress beacon and stuff on it. I doubted that it was just a ship that they put the plague victims on and sent them out into space. I figured it was more of, this is an Autobot warship during the war. Megatron found a way to infest that ship with the virus, and now they're all on this ship dying.
Yeah.
Hence the distress beacon.
I thought he actually said something about having the sick people get on the ship to take it away.
There was an implication of some kind of quarantine thing.
Yeah.
Which, just the combination of all this, maybe this can be a quick topic for discussion, but this really stuck to me is that, again, it's Prime doing this whole thing of being a little bit darker than one might expect, where it's like,
right,
we have a crash-landed ship with no survivors, we see the corpses, and by the way, it was a plague ship, and they all died of a horrifying plague that was set upon them. They were quarantined and were letting off a distress beacon asking for help, which was probably never answered because they had the plague. And all those implications put together, kind of capped off by the dripping corpse hanging from the ceiling, was some pretty spooky imagery to me. Again, like putting myself in the mind of me as a child, I probably would have been a little bit wigged out by that. And I thought that was kind of cool that they're not really pulling any punches on that kind of content.
Yeah, the plague ship was on Earth, though, right?
Yeah. Yep. Like everything else.
Once again, we got scraplet traps, we got energon deposits, we got plague ships, everything makes its way to Earth at one point
or another. I think dirt just happens to be magnetic to Cybertronian alloys.
I'm wondering if they ever bring Unicron in, they're going to reveal that Unicron was like secretly manipulating both sides to just shoot everything at Earth because he foresaw that everyone was going to end up there.
Someone in one of our earlier primetime threads had the, and it was a joke, but he totally had the theory that Earth was Unicron. Now, imagine how nuts that would be. I mean, just think about it for a minute. That you, beyond the, okay, that would be devastating, but just the stories you could tell with that. Like, just there is like levels of soil and magma and stuff over top of Unicron, and if he ever awakes, it's the extinction of the human race.
Yeah,
that would be kind of crazy. But
and it doesn't
again,
feel
somebody had mentioned that a long time ago, and I was like, it would take some balls to tell a story like that from a writing perspective.
It doesn't feel aesthetically unlike Prime though at this point. I mean, it's still a bit of a stretch, but Prime has now set a bit of a not really a bar or a standard, but it's made it known that it's willing to do things like have plague ships and dead comrades and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, then it'd just be freaky because then ultimately, if you're going to destroy Unicron or fight Unicron, then you have to destroy the Earth.
Yeah.
Well, that you couldn't. You could never destroy Unicron.
Yeah.
Because we would die. That's what I'm saying. The more you think about it, the more nuts it gets, and it would be kind of awesome, but they would never go down that road, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that is an episode that possibly will never exist, so we should probably steer the train back to the rails that are manifest and made of metal. Aaron, did you have something from the episode you'd like to bring up?
RC getting some crazy on, and no pink.
I didn't even look for. I forgot to look for it again.
No, that was the first thing we saw. No pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. After that whole discussion, I've been passing that around a little bit, and now it's like its own little infection. Everyone now is going like, "Was there any pink? What's going on?"
Yeah. But no, just the way that when RC and Bumblebee go into knockouts ICU for Megatron, and our first thing RC wants to do is just plug Megatron right there. Gun hand out, blam blam, and then they do their shenanigans through the episode, and then at the end, as she's jumping out, she's like, oh yeah, by the way, you're dead.
How?
Yeah. But just goes to show that, it again, kind of dark series, you know, here's somebody completely helpless on life support, and, you know, Starscream and Knockout are trying to push the hard sell on Soundwave to pull the plug, and Archie's like, no, you don't got a choice, blam blam.
Well, I also like that at no point does anyone really stop her for a moral reason.
Right.
It's just like, no, he has the cure for the plague, and we need that, so don't kill him. It's not like, no, you can't shoot a defenseless person because that is morally bad. It's like, no, we need what he has.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, not only do we need what he has, we're going to break our own laws to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Just the fact that Ratchet's like, yeah, we're going to do this brain hacking thing. What was it? Cortical psychic patch?
Yeah, Frank Welker said it like 15 times in a row, and I still couldn't remember the...
Kind of sounds like a Windows upgrade.
Cortical psychic patch! Yeah, the Autobots are very, they aren't pulling punches. I guess that's the phrase that I keep saying. But it's true. And RC was pretty badass in this one.
Yeah, and the thing that I liked about RC is in this episode, it's... And so much, like, so many other series would be like, okay, the Autobots find Megatron, but they're going to just do their own thing and they're going to let him sit there. You as a viewer would be like, he's right there. Why would you not want to take him out while he's right there? And that's the very first thing RC does is she charges up her gun and she's about to decapitate his ass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, because she's doing what we as a viewer is thinking. They're not.
Yeah.
It's
human face. He's right there. Yeah. He's got a face. Shoot it.
Yeah. So I just thought that was kind of satisfying because they didn't come up with some they did come up with an excuse of why they didn't, but it made sense because it was a life or death situation, and one of the characters, without even thinking, was going to do that until someone else talked them out of it for the sake of the greater good.
And it also really worked.
That was the first reaction was, okay. Option A, we blow his head off. Option B, you find a way to stop me.
Well, I also really like that it was RC because it would have made even less sense if she was there and didn't do it because she has so much. We have seen now that she has so much baggage and lost comrades at the hands of the Decepticons. The chance to kill the one who started it all, it would not make sense for her to look at him and go like, oh yeah, look, he's coming to us. Anyway, plague. I agree. RC was pretty cool. Omegas, how about you? What have you got for the table?
Here, let me see, because I actually had the time to take notes this week.
Damn it. I'm still working on doing that. One day I'm gonna have notes for this.
Season finale, series finale.
Look,
I got a note. It says
RC was
Kitty.
Pink! That's my only note.
There's a continuing trend for this episode of writing Prime out of the episode.
Oh, yeah, they came up with an excuse for him not to be there pretty upfront.
Yeah.
It's starting to become a trend. You know, okay, well, Megatron's not around, so, you know, Prime usually gets saddled to a backstage role.
Well, they also, I think, they play it up in that when he does show up, like in that, in Speed Metal, when Prime does show up, he kind of diffuses the entire situation in about 1 second. Because he is that strong. Yeah.
I think it's kind of a good thing that Prime isn't there front and center every episode.
Yeah. But it's writing themselves into the Superman corner where you ever see Justice League, you know, Superman gets written out every single episode because if he was around, it'd be over in 5 minutes.
Yeah, and
that's true.
I was going to make that same comparison that they have made Optimus Prime so powerful that without a Megatron to get in his way, it would be tricky, I think, to write him in. They did a good job, I think, in Deus Ex, when they had him kind of get that two-on-one treatment. They're doing a good job, I think, of balancing out Prime's effectiveness without entirely downplaying him. But
yeah, he is still kind of a demigod, though, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into the habit of comparing Prime to animated, and I think we have done a good job of doing nothing but discussing the show on its own merits, but I like if you look at the Prime of and even G1, look at the Prime of Prime, the Prime of G1, and then compare it to something like animated, and there is kind of a huge difference there, and I think that's what we've gone from, at least in an animated series, as a Prime who is, at least in the beginning, fairly ineffectual.
Yeah.
He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's a strategic thinker. He knows what he's doing, but he can't just go one-on-one with everybody and completely kick their ass every time. And we kind of have that Prime now, almost. I mean, they make some exceptions, but in the end, he still pulls through and saves the day, like with the whole thing with stopping the train and coming out of nowhere and stopping Knockout and saving the kid. And I guess it would be kind of it's something that I would normally frown upon. Like, well, if the good guys have this weapon and they have always have access to this weapon, why would they not always use the weapon? Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's I have no problems with the writers finding a way to remove the weapon from the situation because I like to see the other characters deal with things because they are, to me, 100% more interesting. Like RC flipping out and saying, I am gonna cap this dude in his jawbone. Like, you know, Optimus wouldn't do that. So I'm glad that Optimus wasn't in this situation.
Well, the other nice thing is they were able to turn the reason why Prime's not there into the driving force for the episode. Just like, well, he was in the other room.
Well, yeah, it was. Yeah, see, it was kind of like the Scrapplet episode in that, where, you know, there was a plot point behind why he was absent.
Just stemming off the reasons why you'd leave Prime out, there was one thing that I think they've done to legitimize him being around when he is there, is that, if I recall correctly, often in combat situations, they outnumber him pretty heavily. So they kind of play him as, like, Prime is worth, you know, 15 Erraticons, or Vehicons, as someone pointed out they may be called as well.
Erraticons is small.
I think Erraticons is a way better name than Vehicons.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Vehicons is bad Beast Wars memories.
Where have they been officially named? Like,
well, as I understand it,
they've never been mentioned on the show.
I think the website called them. Yeah, I think the website called him one thing, and the episode summaries called him another.
Yeah, and then when one speaks, I think that they've had a vocal credit as Vehicon, but then on the website, their name, or at least the name of the image of them, is like Erraticon.jpg. As far as I understand it, it's entirely equal, the amount that they've been called Vehicon and Erraticon. Just for me, I would much rather have a new name than reusing Vehicon, because Vehicons, I got nothing against them. But these guys are Erraticons to me, until it's stated that they're not, and then I'll just complain and call them Erraticons anyway.
Oh boy.
But another thing I could bring up in this episode would be a really obvious one, but Megatron has some pretty freaky fever dreams when he's half brain dead.
Yeah.
And that was some pretty cool. Again, the show was going some neat places with the imagery. He has a sick mind. And I like the idea that Megatron's kind of like personal purgatory in his head is just the flaming ruins of Kaon and an infinite number of Optimus Primes that just keep saying Optimus Prime phrases at him as he shoots them and they vaporize. And
well, was it really a purgatory? Because he seemed to be enjoying the process.
He was kind of enjoying it, but then it seemed like the moment he realized it wasn't real, it became more like less of a personal heaven and more of a personal hell. And I wonder if maybe, just given how he's been comatose this long, how many times has he kind of gone in and out of like, wait, this is useless. It's just me and a million primes.
I got the impression that it was very similar to a dream where he was just there. Nothing seemed weird to him at first until Bumblebee went down there.
Yeah.
And then when he started thinking, it's like a lucid dream. You know, you start off like, yeah, absolutely weird things that would never in a million years happen to you are going on all around you, and it's cool. And then you have that thing that happens very rarely where you're like, oh, snap, I'm in a dream. And then everything around you, just you can see it. It's just, it's just, you know, it's different. And suddenly you know that you're not in the real world anymore. And that's, I got the impression that was totally what happened to him. He was just going on about his thing. Just Autobots would show up. He'd kill them. Didn't seem strange to him. He was doing his thing. And then Bumblebee shows up and he starts piecing it together. He's like, wait a minute. This can't be real. Why am I continuously just destroying Prime and the other Autobots over and over again? That makes no sense. I can't destroy you. He starts piecing it together and then realized exactly the way a person does when they have a lucid dream. Mm-hmm. This isn't right, but and like I was also fascinated by the whole kind of brain dive thing, because I mean it's not, I guess, not that big a deal, but I'm also like a huge fan of the Ghost in the Shell franchise.
Gonna say
and you can do something, they do similar things, but it's kind of simulated because while they're still technically augmented, they're still human brains, and I think it's a much more natural phenomenon to have that occur within robot organisms where their brains are basically computers. I mean, maybe not necessarily the computers that work in the same way that our computers do, but they are still a technology, if you will.
Programmable to some degree.
Yes. So yeah. the fact that this could happen completely, I think it makes more sense and it feels more natural. And it's I don't know, like that whole parallel to that kind of like Ghost in the Shell brain dive type thing was very interesting to me.
Here's what I wanted to know about that whole scene. Is that they're in cyberspace. This is a mental projection of these two characters. Bumblebee's voice is still borked.
I was wondering if he was going to suddenly say something, and I was actually sitting there going like, wait a second, if that's not really him, what if he actually says something? How screwed up would that be? But they didn't do it. And I understand why they wouldn't do it, just for the sake of keeping things simple, but I was actually really sitting there going like, you know, what would really get me jazzed about this episode is if Bumblebee just starts talking in cyberspace.
Right. Well, yeah. I gotta wonder, was when Bumblebee showed Megatron's death or whatever to him, to Megatron, was that something he can do normally, like make his eyeball project things, or is that just because they're brain space?
I think that was just a real psychic thing, and I think that was Megatron upon realization that, you know, kind of like the lucid dream breaking kind of thing. That was him then remembering, wait, what happened to me is that the space bridge blew up in my face.
I don't know, though, because then later it seems like Megatron understood the bleep, bloop, blorp stuff for the cybonic plague.
But it wasn't actually bleep, bloop, blorps. I mean, that was kind of the projection, like they're in like an alternate reality, but at the same time, their brains are connected. Like that was spelled out in the beginning, and Bumblebee's eyes didn't, I don't think, actually projected the scene. It was just more of a metaphorical. Megatron is looking into his brain and sharing his information because they, to some extent, they were in the same brain space. So Megatron was able to at least access that information of what had happened to him. He got that from Bumblebee, but
I thought that was kind of like just a Megatron POV shot of like, that is what Megatron is seeing right now in his crazy fever dream, is he's looking at Bumblebee and then Bumblebee's eyes are going like, and then he's remembering all the other stuff that happened, and then it just happened to look like episode 5 of the 5-parter because that's the footage they have, and it makes the most sense to do it like that.
Yeah.
I really, this is kind of touching back to Frank Welker, but I really liked his acting when he was realizing all this stuff too. He was doing a really good job of just, you know, when he's going like, what are you, what are you doing here? You know, realizing where he is, he was really getting across this great, reactionary kind of tone.
Yeah. And before he got the information that he had died in the space bridge explosion, there was this really panicky moment where he realized that if the Autobots are doing a psychic patch into my brain, that means they have physical access to me. If they have physical access to me, where the hell is my body and what happened?
Yeah, that was so good.
He was very, very panicky. It was Megatron actually seemed to show fear. Like, I'm incapacitated physically in the real world. What the hell is going on?
Yeah. Just the whole thing of him just kind of react, the reactionary thing, just flipping out and stuff like that was, and especially at the end when he realizes that, you know, he's like, you tricked me. He realizes that Bumblebee's been projecting the whole thing the whole time to the Autobot base. And that last line where he's like, take me with you was, I really loved it.
That was raw emotion. That wasn't Megatron threatening. It was, if you leave me here, I have no control other than to just sit in this stupid mind alternate reality thing. Like, get me out of here. Like, it was almost a legitimate appeal.
No, and that's what I loved about it, because it also kind of, this is a bit of a stretch, I admit, it kind of brought me back to some of what I loved about season 3 Galvatron from G1, is that he was, you know, kind of insane. This Megatron, we've discussed, is a little bit bonkers to a degree, but, he was also at times, and I think Galvatron did this too, able to do this whole thing of getting across these real reactions where he wouldn't just be a cartoon villain. Like, I would cite Webworld, for instance. That's the big one where Galvatron kind of has an actual character break for a G1 episode. And so that Take Me With You, I was so digging, because, like, Megatron sees, like, the whole Kaon dream is just crumbling and exploding around him. And that scene was so cinematically done, I thought, of the whole dream sequence just imploding, yeah, as Bumblebee's getting sucked out of it. I was after it happened, I was like, you know, that was one of the coolest clips of the show so far. Just that moment, so well done.
Yeah, I was very fascinated too with the whole negotiation between him and Bumblebee. I will say this was probably my favorite Bumblebee moment of the show, because even though you couldn't hear the words that were coming out of his mouth, he was totally negotiating to save Megatron's life, and basically saying, like, you got something I want, I have the ability to do something that you want, and I, even though it probably wouldn't have ended up as climactic as the way this is going to end, I kind of want to see how that negotiation would have played out had they not gotten the snapshot of that formula.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that was leading down some interesting territory.
It was getting kind of dark.
Yeah. Because it was going to basically lead to the point of them, like, telling Megatron that, like, look, your body is in this room. It's going to be killed by your own subordinates. We can get you out of here as long as you help us, and it probably would have ended up with Megatron being at least back in life support in the Autobot base, or even possibly resurrected there. It would have been interesting, because I totally got the impression, at least from Bumblebee, that he was willing to go that far to get the formula.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I kind of want to see how that would have played out.
Just the follow-on thought of, now you're going to have the Autobots defending Megatron, potentially, from the Decepticons who are trying to kill Megatron, because Megatron wants to live to lead the Decepticons so that he can fight and kill Optimus Prime, who they're saving Megatron to save Prime. Recursive,
whoa,
scary.
Whoa, Aaron. Aaron.
It became layered.
Relax.
That was the exact line, now that Aaron mentioned it. It was if you don't help us save Optimus, you'll never get the pleasure of killing him yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
And that came from Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was actually wondering, I'm guessing that Bumblebee was operating under some pretenses, knowing and with the other Autobots knowing that everything was being recorded, but I was actually waiting for some of the other Autobots to go, like, what is he doing at some point? Of, like, you know, wait, tell him not to say that.
If that would have happened, again, we're kind of getting into speculatory what if, but this was the scenario that was just dangled in front of our face, so I think it's appropriate, but how would RC have reacted if
she knew?
If she knew, because just moments before, she was going to assassinate Megatron, and the only reason why Bumblebee was in the brain patch, the psychic patch, was because she wasn't willing to do it. Mm-hmm. Even with Optimus's life on the line, she was not willing to do the patch. It was Bumblebee that just stepped up and did it. So how would she have felt if that had resulted in the resurrection of Megatron? I don't think she necessarily would have handled that very well.
And perhaps, again, this is a case of just some smart writing of, to avoid us wondering why she's not saying anything, she's in the she's there, and she's the only one who can't hear what's going on, thus getting rid of that whole, you know, potential loose thread of why didn't RC say anything, given her own motivations.
Right.
I will readily admit I am perhaps giving the writing team too much credit there, but at this point, I think that it's an okay hypothesis to say that they seem to be pretty smart about who they're putting where when an episode happens. There's one moment I wanted to bring up that stuck with me in the episode, which is when Bumblebee goes into the dream sequence, he literally at one point just goes, beep, boop, and then Raph goes, Bumblebee says that that's Kaon, the former capital city of the Transport. Yeah. And I was like, I think this is more evidence that Raph is just making stuff up.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I could think of in his defense is, like, he said it's Kaon, and then for the other two, he knows what Kaon is, so he's relaying what that is.
I was hoping still, but it was hilarious. It was like, beep, boop, and he just starts talking for, like, 5 minutes.
You can tell it's Kaon by the architectural features on the Great Spire in the background.
And everyone's just like, shut up, Raph. from his deathbed, Optimus is like, shut up, Raph. Aaron, have you got anything from the episode you'd like to bring up?
One thing that I thought of while watching the episode the first time around is I kind of wonder why they didn't also send Bulkhead along, which for the story, they needed to have the scout and RC because they're hiding. But at the same time, in my mind, you know what? If I've got the ability to ground bridge straight into the middle of the enemy ship, why not send the Wrecker?
If they weren't trying to find something.
Yeah.
You have the Wrecker stand at the door while they're getting the information.
Yeah, but they also really played it up the fact that they were using Bumblebee as a scout. And they kind of even overemphasized his
Autobot scout.
His Autobot function is scout. And if, especially the part where RC and Bumblebee were there hiding back in the behind that pile of wires, that would have never worked for Bulkhead. So it was probably just because
I know it's Bulkhead a story contrived, but the thing in my mind still is like, why not send everyone? Okay, I know that Prime can't go because he's not feeling well, and you've got Ratchet looking out for him, but at the same time, send the big guns.
You're still talking about them being ridiculously outnumbered. It had to be a covert mission, and you're not going to have the big guy that's going to be heard reverberating all the way through the ship as he stomps around through the hallways.
Well, send him off to a different corner of the ship to cause damage and draw attention away.
A bit of a suicide mission, though, to go like, hey, send Bulkhead to the Erratico
barracks. If they've still got space bridge or ground bridge powers, then why not? I don't know.
I think there's been a somewhat established thing of they don't want to leave the ground bridge open because Decepticons could use it to get to their base as well.
That's true, yeah.
I recall that being actually stated somewhere in an episode, but I don't entirely remember where. I might be misremembering. But I think that's part of the reason. In terms of canon, that is part of a reason why they would have left him behind. They did say scout a lot, though. I noticed that Megatron just kept calling him Autobot Scout, and then at the very end, Prime's like, ah, yes, Bumblebee, my scout. And I was like, this is like a toy plug? Is he going to get a scout-sized toy somewhere? We have some good times here.
No, we just changed that size's name.
That's right. They're commanders now. I forot.
Yeah.
Gog, is there another part of the episode you'd like to bring up? That was not part of the episode.
Okay, let's do some Decepticon action besides Megatron. How about Starscream and Knockout basically finally coming to an open discussion about allowing Megatron to die and them taking their place as the rulers of the Decepticons.
I thought it really worked because Knockout was already playing kind of a bit of a Starscream to Starscream. Being, you know, a somewhat antagonistic dude who's one tier below, but in a position where Starscream can't really do anything permanent to just off him. They had that little bit of a cattiness going on, and it kind of worked for me that they were the ones to go like, you know, we could run this show a lot better if we just winked and nodded about this one thing. And I loved how they were in total fear of Soundwave the entire time.
Yes. There's no doubt that Starscream rules the Decepticons at this point. Soundwave even seems to be taking orders from him for the most part, but he almost seems to have this function, like a legal function, like
secret police,
Directive 5,
right? Something where in the absence of Megatron, like Soundwave has a function that is given to him by Decepticon law that even if someone else takes command cannot take this power from Starscream unless Megatron is actually dead or even after. So it's just, and even if it's not that, that means they're just super afraid of this dude because if he ever knows the truth, he is going to wrestle what control they've worked to have straight from their hands. I think it works either way.
Well, I take it as...
Because logically, I mean, the reason you're scared of Soundwave is because he's the eyes and ears of Megatron. Well, Megatron's comatose right now, but they're still scared to death of the guy.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think that there's two different ways I looked at it. It's either Soundwave, when they say, you know, he's the eyes and ears of the Decepticons, I was like, if they do something too treacherous, he'll just tell all the other Decepticons and they'll have to deal with dealing with everyone else. Or, and this one is a little bit more interesting, but a bit less likely, Soundwave actually is, like, quote-unquote, a legal accountability function. He's like, no matter what you do, he's like Soundwave is there to prevent the Decepticons from being a full-on anarchy, and that you can't just usurp. You still got to go through the right channels, or Soundwave. Yeah,
and that's the impression I got, because they had to make their case to Soundwave.
Mm-hmm.
That and even though we've seen in the past, since Starscream is leading the Decepticons at this point, there's no doubt, at least from a military point of view, from a chain of command point of view, but in this episode, we clearly see Starscream having to plot with Knockout because they have to make their case in front of Soundwave.
Yeah.
So he it's almost like I'm trying to think of a good analog here, but it would kind of like be like in the military if one was a legal officer. Say you have a military lawyer who is technically a lieutenant. That lieutenant would answer to the colonel, but if the colonel did something unlawful, it would be that lieutenant who was a lawyer, it would be his responsibility to the force that he serves to bring that higher ranking officer up on charges. And there's things that a colonel couldn't do if he's not a lawyer that he would still have to have the lawyer sign off on because he is a legal official. Mm-hmm. So I think while maybe we're reading way too much into it, they've definitely given the impression that Soundwave, in the absence of Megatron, doesn't necessarily get the chain of command, but some of the legal responsibilities of the Decepticons have, in some part, seem to have passed to him. So there are things that Starscream really can't do if he wants to keep his cover and his current position as the leader.
And it, actually, I have a direct parallel I can make, but unfortunately, it's from the lore of City of Heroes, which a lot of people probably don't know or care about. But there is a direct parallel I can draw, which is there's a version of City of Heroes called City of Villains, where you play as a bad guy. And in order to have a structure to that game, and to give some lore to the evil bad guy group who run, you know, the Rogue Isles, it's a group called Arachnos, who totally promote anarchy and infighting to show who's the strongest, but for the sake of having some semblance of order about what they do, they have these guys called the Arbiters. And the Arbiters are basically like, no matter who you are, even if you are one of, you know, the Lord of Arachnos's right-hand men, if you try to backstab one of the other ones, you answer to the Arbiter. Everyone answers to the Arbiter, no matter who they are. And then the way they legitimize it to me is that, you know, and for Soundwave even, everyone answers to Soundwave if they're going to act outside of the quote-unquote law. And if they break it, the other Decepticons, there's a legion of Erraticons, and the Erraticons are not the brightest bulbs. And I'm sure that if Soundwave says, we have, you know, Starscream has killed Megatron, it's our duty to destroy him now, the Erraticons probably aren't going to argue it that much because Soundwave just told them to do it. And they're probably trained.
The one thing I had in mind is it may also be the fact that, okay, Soundwave's the eyes and ears of Megatron. How many files does he have on everything?
Yeah.
You know, so you can, so even, he has even if he doesn't
all, he
necessarily
has all
have
of the files,
even if he doesn't have a legal standing, he can just sit there and play back the recording of, you know, Starscream saying those Erraticons are a bunch of stupid heads or whatever. And then, you know, the rank and file are going to go after him, and may not be something that's legal, but it's just as good.
That's a good point. They may not be afraid of Soundwave being anything other than Soundwave because they don't want to cross him as an individual. Like, I didn't necessarily think of that either. I always thought about him serving Megatron and the information getting back to Megatron or the other Decepticons, but it might just be that they are so afraid of Soundwave and the information he has, they just don't want to cross him. So they have to convince Soundwave himself that Megatron did actually perish legitimately, and that Chain of Command has legally passed on to Starscream in order for Soundwave to finally recognize Starscream now that Megatron is 100% gone forever. And if they do anything to him, he has information that will destroy them in all sorts of ways, or anyone who crosses Soundwave.
And this was kind of communicated as well, and I know we brought it up back when Starscream found Megatron's body, and then Soundwave's drone showed up, and Starscream literally was just like, "Oh my!" Oh, you know, like he flipped out. He's like, "Oh God, it's Soundwave. He's watching."
Go
ahead.
I thought the other interesting thing about Soundwave this episode, which was incredibly creepy, he didn't make a peep.
Yep.
Didn't play back a recording, didn't do anything. His visor was just completely black, and all he would do is just stand there and point.
Yeah.
He didn't even play back a sound. He just stood there, and it's like, is he sleeping? Is he staring at me? is he accessing the internet? What's he doing?
The first time because he pointed, we don't know. The first time he pointed, there was this marvelous body language in him where he didn't just turn to Starscream and then point at the monitor. He turned and he loomed at Starscream and pointed at the monitor without even looking at the monitor. And it was just this without even, he didn't say a single thing, but you just got this impression of he's going like, the monitor says he's alive, so what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was just a great opportunity to finally get our wish of him making some sort of sound, have creepy voice or anything, and then it stayed quiet. And I don't know if I was happier or sadder because
I was happy because it just meant this wasn't worth it. Yeah, this wasn't worth it for him to say anything yet.
Yeah, even to pull the plug on Megatron, he's still staying silent.
There was a moment where I think, and again, this might not have been intended, but it gave me the impression that it was kind of like a red herring moment of, is he going to say something? Where there was that prolonged shot of Starscream and Knockout making the final moments of their case. And all you see is the reflection of the monitors in Soundwave's faceplate, and he's just staring at the monitor. And you just wait. I was just sitting there going, like, you know, imagining in my head, you know, among the many things that could be going through his head, he's just sitting there looking at the monitor, going, like, you know, do something, Spike, something. Like he's sitting there trying to will the monitor to do something, or just staring at it, going, like, coming to acceptance with the idea that Megatron is dead. And it's the beauty of how they're doing Soundwave, is that you can have these debates about what he's thinking, because he's played to such a good degree. And I'm sure in hindsight, if they ever do the revelation on Soundwave, one would be able to go back to these episodes, watch them again, and then pull entirely new experiences out of them, going like, well, now that I know this, you know, I love this Soundwave so much. Like, seriously. And this was even going to be about the other Decepticons, and it just became a Soundwave topic.
Yeah. Jeez, I think you talked about Knockout for all of, 30 seconds?
Soundwave's been off-screen for a while, and perhaps I am knee-jerking a little bit to seeing him again, but it was such a welcome return to see Soundwave back and in force in the way that he is in force. When he shows up on camera, such a good character. That he's like my single linchpin argument where I go, like, no matter what you tell me about what you think is bad about Prime, I will not accept that this Soundwave is a poor character right now. And like, he's like my linchpin of, like,
yeah, I agree with that completely. Yeah. I think that no matter how you want to, because I have friends that do not like Prime. They have given up on the show completely. They don't watch it. But I completely agree with you that I would say it's almost borderline not opinion that this Soundwave is awesome.
Yeah, they're not even awesome, but that it's an interestingly written, highly enigmatic character that is an excellently done piece of, we're going to make you happy and interested to see him back on screen.
Yeah, or you could just say awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm pulling all the stops out on this one, but yeah, he is a legitimately well-written character, in my opinion. And I will, as I said, I'll defend him over anything else in the show. And I mean, I'd defend plenty. Animation's pretty cool. I forgot where I am. Omegas, do you have anything you'd like to bring up?
We're starting to run a little low here, but I want to complete the trifecta of things you like to talk about. Jeffrey Combs had some really strong performances in this one.
Oh, man. When he was in the plague ship, just in that opening pre-credit scene, he was doing a good job of, like, reacting to the plague.
It was the scene when he realized Megatron was still alive and he didn't want Prime to die on Megatron's.
Yeah. Oh. I'm just going to throw out all the Autobot morals right now.
Well, even
just threw everything into that one line. It's just I'm not used to hearing an Autobot just go completely off the hook like that.
That line was awesome, and I think his other best delivery on a line, I think, was when he realized that it was a plague ship, and he told Optimus not to touch anything. Like it played really well when he it's like he's like, you know, don't touch anything. We got to get out of here as soon as possible. This whole place is contaminated.
Also, the part where he was basically trying to convince someone that there was no time to bring Megatron back, there was no time to do anything other than you need to go in, you need to do that patch, and you need to do it now, regardless of the danger, because we have to save our friend. And it calls back to Ratchet during the... Which episode was it? Was it the Scraplets, where he... Yeah, it was the Scraplets episode when Prime and RC were trapped in the snow region, and there was a situation that came up. He was the only one that was knowledgeable. He wasn't in command necessarily, but he knows he's the only one that fixes it, and he steps up and he starts shouting orders, not because he's on a power trip, but because he knows what needs to be done. And he knows that it needs to be done now, and he knows that he's the only one that can get it done. And so people have to listen to him if lives are going to be saved. This is the exact same situation. And this is a trait of Ratchet that I really like, in that he doesn't want to be in charge. He's not on some sort of power trip. But the minute a situation comes up that's within his control to fix and life is on the line, he doesn't care who you are. He doesn't care if you outrank him. You will shut up, you will listen to him, and you will listen to his steps, step by step, until the situation's done, and then that's that. The lives are saved, and everybody can go back to being whatever they were before that. And it's that doctor in the emergency room saying, I don't care who you are, come over here and bring me that saw, you're my assistant until this guy stops bleeding, and I don't want to hear any smack out of you, or this guy's going to die, and then you're going to have to deal with me. And it's a personality trait of Ratchet that I adore.
Well, Omegas, like you said, it's one of my favorite things to bring up. And I say that a lot of this comes from the fact that they got Jeffrey Combs, who is an actor and a voice actor of some quality and caliber. And they're writing him lines that he can deliver. And it's very sweet when it happens. This was in hindsight, because I only watched the episode once so far, but in hindsight, there was so much good audio alone in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So many good lines.
It's something they just really picked well, the voice casting in this series. Just when you have Steve Bloom and Clancy Brown both going kind of sinister, and, you know, it just works so well. Because they knew those characters going in, and they just absolutely spot on.
It's definitely, I think, one of the best talking points for Prime. And I mean, it's very reiterative of me to say it. But Prime has some excellent voice work. And, you know, as I said before, for every negative anyone's going to bring up about Prime, another one I won't accept is if someone says Prime's voice acting is chintzy. It's like, I don't think it is.
No.
I think it is very well done.
Just to correct myself before anyone does it in the thread, it's Darren Norris that was Knockout. I had the different voice actor in my head at the time.
All the same names that we've said before.
I just finished with a show that had Clancy Brown in it, so just
really good voice work in this show. I'm always impressed. And I guess another one I like to bring up, just to bring up another topic, is just standout moments of animation in this episode. For me, definitely the most awesome clip of the episode was the dream sequence breakdown, when everything started to just detonate around them and explode and swirl as Megatron was screaming his big final line. And I thought that was, I'll bring it up as my favorite part. It was just a really well done moment that if you only saw that clip, you know, just for a moment, the show really overshadowed its own nature as being a TV show there, I think, and just delivered a really good bit of, cinematic imagery. Just for, at least for that moment, I think, of everything breaking down and the line, it was a very cinematic moment, that I was very impressed by. But, did any of you guys see any other cool stuff in the animation that really stuck out? Folks evaporating?
Yeah. It's kind of hard because you're talking about an episode where it's essentially three static rooms and...
It's true.
Just, You didn't have a whole lot visually going on.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of subtleties, there's always Soundwave. He's like a subtlety generator.
Mm-hmm. Subtlety generator.
Everything he does is understated and creepy as hell. We brought up the looming and the pointing. But, I mean, those alone were reasons why I'd say, you know, again, some well-done animation here. I guess I might have shot that one in the foot. Yeah, there's not really... there weren't any, like, prolonged battle scenes. And I did not go back to rewatch to look for any facial intricacies in Ratchet or Prime, who, in particular, I thought might have some.
Sad thing is, most of what I watch for now is if those pink diamonds are on RC. Which is just bad, because it just means I'm spending the whole episode watching RC's chest.
You ruined yourself.
Wrong.
You brought that on yourself. I have nothing to do with it.
I admit to it.
I was the last one to get on that train. I don't know. Aaron, have you got anything else you'd like to bring up?
No, I'm just still amazed by the way that the episode ended.
That's something we can bring up, is the ending.
Hadn't really talked about that. It's like, this is all kind of spoilery zone anyway, but it seemed like everybody's been dancing around the very end of, oh yeah, Megatron hitched a ride back with Bumblebee.
He's in his brain.
Yeah.
And that, I thought, was pretty cool, because if you're going to have a Megatron in your brain, this is a pretty nasty Megatron to have living in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe they're going to regret not just negotiating and bringing him back, because now he's pissed. And he's also inside us.
Yeah, definitely. And I believe that that's going to be the crux of the next episode, if I recall the solicitation I saw.
Yeah.
Luckily, I did not see until after this episode.
The previews of next time have some interesting bits. Mm-hmm. With what looks to be Bumblebee jamming a Dark Energon shard into Megatron's body.
Ooh.
It's...
Who knows? Maybe they're playing red herrings. Maybe that's some kind of fever dream as well. That's the nice thing about this two-parter, is you don't know what's fever dream in the previews.
That's the nice thing about having a more of a in-head episode like this, is I can't trust anything that was in the preview.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know a lot of this is happening mentally now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nice way to kind of soft diffuse some outright spoiler material. Although I'm sure, you know, many will say, well, it's pretty obvious it's not a dream, or it's pretty obvious it's a dream. And it's like, well, I want to stay somewhat naive up until I watch the episode. I want to embrace my naivete, as one might say. Gog, did you have anything else you'd like to bring up?
No, as far as the bullet points I wanted to cover, I think that's about it. Unless somebody else has something that I'll be like, oh, yeah.
Omegas, did you have something else on your written list?
I believe that is it.
Damn. Once again, props to Prime for being a 20-some minute cartoon that we can discuss for an hour. Sign of good things. Is it going to be weekly again? Because there was there a one-week skip over the last one? It kind of messed me up.
Yeah, there was a one-week skip, and... what was even the reason for that? I thought there was something else that was kind of going on.
I did not keep up with it. I just remember that weekend I realized that at no point did Twitter have any tweets that made me like bail off the internet. So I was like, did everyone miss Prime? Did it air?
Everyone all at once missed Prime last week.
Yeah, I was really confused. And then I was like, should I be planning for a Prime time, or what's going on? Is Prime airing next weekend? Or are we on another... I'm guessing we're back
to
weekly.
Actually, no, I can check real quick if you want to...
Yeah, you...
If you want to ramble
you
for
do.
A minute.
I was trying to load up my local TV listings, but...
Well, whilst you guys are loading those up, I'll just reiterate again for those who may be just joining us for the first time or so. If you do want to enjoy Prime properly, please do what you can. Do your best to watch it in high def. Grab Dark Prime's 720p encodes. Watch it in high def on TV. This is a show that warrants being watched in high definition because the animation company puts a lot into the texturing and the quality of the animation, and it pays to watch it in high def. So please do.
Yes, it is a new Transformers this week. It is called Out of His Head.
Bam. All right. That title, I can guess where that title's coming from now. Because Megatron is legitimately out of his head. Yeah, the only other thing I got is that I was, I actually thought they were going to blow Megatron's body up and pull a whole animated thing of it's time for a new Megatron toy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And maybe ramming Dark Energon into it, if that happens, that would reformat it. But I honestly thought it was going to be his body is in pieces.
Yeah, I will yeah. say, as cool as that final... Okay, that final shot where RC shoots Megatron's chest and then kind of does this backflip reverse matrix jump into a closing ground bridge, awesome.
Yeah.
Kind of anticlimactic when Knockout just goes over and just replugs it back
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
I kind of have to admit that I was like, oh, snap, RC did it. Like, she actually did it. Yeah. Oh, wait.
Because I was waiting for Soundwave to flip out, and then Soundwave was just all kind of like pointing at the pipe and then waiting and then going like, okay, we'll plug him back in. I was like, but he's flatlined. And yeah, I understand he's a robot, yeah. but... He's yeah. been off his so life support for like a minute.
That entire final, completely badass couple of seconds there.
No consequence.
And yeah. I was really disappointed by that.
Yeah, awesome scene, great shot. She gets her best shot off, and it knocks the wire loose.
Yeah, I was like, when I saw him plug the wire back in, I was like, man, RC, you know, account for when you're jumping. Aim yeah. too high.
Hit something, yeah. not just
upgrade
the plug.
Your physics drivers.
It's like account for pressing spacebar, crying out loud. But I guess we can leave it at that. So thank you once again, Gog, Aaron, and Omegas for joining me for another Prime Time. We'll see you after the next episode airs, and by see you, I mean you'll listen to us. So until then, Prime out.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.